That was beautiful, guys. Thank you so much. Thank y'all. It's wonderful. Hey, good to see you.
What's up?
We missed you.
Missed you too.
We missed you. You weren't here last week.
I was not.
No, but for those of you that were, I'm a man of my word. Bruce, give me a beat. It's about the crucifixion and the resurrection. If you don't free your mind, you won't get to heaven. If you keep your feet on the ground, you will be mortally bound. But if you can find your highest self, you will attain your greatest wealth. Now that that's done, it's time for our regularly scheduled Easter program. Oh, wow. All right. How are we doing today? Yeah, I like the energy. I dig it. Everyone looks very nice, especially you ladies. I love the bonnets. I see some of you wearing them. Look good. Got the pastel going. Parents, how y'all doing this morning? Yeah? Your kids all jacked up, ready to take in the YFM message? Yeah? Yeah, we got woken up this morning at 3:30, 4:30, and 5. And at the 5 o'clock mark, I'd kind of lost my sense of holiness. I get a text from Mom at about 7, when are we going to do Easter? I text her back, lamenting our struggle. She's like, well, it's time to resurrect your ass. And I was all upset and crappy about it. Get up. And then I realized, man, it's time to practice what I preach. It really is, because I was lamenting being tired, being worn out, being stressed, right? It can be tough, or we say it is up here, but it's not really the case. And being that it's Easter, and the true message is about crucifixion and hence the ascension and resurrection, I started thinking, how do we get here to pastels, Easter bunnies, and sugar highs? So I did a little research. I really didn't know the link. I didn't know the correlation. And like any person of our times, I went to the Encyclopedia Britannica of our times, Wikipedia. And on there, they had some information for me. Apparently, the whole Easter hare or Easter rabbit originated with German Lutheranism back in antiquity. And the rabbit signified the judge. So basically, it judged the children during Eastertide, if they were good or bad, and then get the eggs. Probably not the candy, but, you know, flavored treats, colored treats. Very similar to Christmas time and the naughty or nice list. If you're not good, then Santa's watching. He's not going to bring you any gifts. You're going to get coal. So that was interesting. And it also led me to believe that parents have been struggling since the dawn of time to keep their kids in line with these stories. Another interesting facet of it was that the philosophers of the time in antiquity thought that the hare was a hermaphrodite, which also was the allegory and representation of the Virgin Mary and the conception, that they didn't need to lose their virginity in order to procreate, so the divine child. So it was in a lot of iconography and paintings and art back then. And then the idea of the egg has for a long time represented fertility in Christianity, the phoenix egg, the rising from the ashes, as Jesus did. I thought that was cool. You know, really, I like tying it together and leave it to us in modern times to just take the candy to the nth degree, but I think it correlates. And I like the idea of the Easter egg and resurrection. Because if you think about it, on face value, there's an egg, right? And it's got a hard exterior. It's very similar to us. We have this facade, this skin, this suit that keeps us protected against the element. But underneath it, there's just so much more. There's so much more than meets the eye. And we focus so much on the external, this facade, outside rather than inside. And if the shell, if we didn't know any better, you know, well, if our shell gets cracked, if we struggle, if we're under stress, if we believe in a perceived illness, we think it's the end of the line for us and we get stressed out. But like the egg, You crack the egg, it's not the end of the journey. You know, you sit on the egg, a hen sits on the egg, life comes forth from it. Or you could be like my wife and buy 9 new chicks, so you don't have to wait for that. Hopefully one of them is not an angry rooster that's going to attack me constantly. R.I.P. Tiberius. No, I'm kidding, he's still alive. But back to the point, there's life. There's a through line through it. You crack the egg, it's edible. It provides nourishment. We can eat it, therefore showing that energy cannot be destroyed. It's the through line of life, much like our spirit inside of us. Just because we suffer on the outside, or if our facade, if our exterior seems a little bit cracked or compromised, we need to have faith that there's so much more to us, so much more in the through line of life. And that's what Jesus showed us on the cross, in the crucifixion, that there is no death. We keep going on and on. It's just, life changes shape, changes the one consistent in our lives. And as I said, energy cannot be destroyed. It's just that we get so fixated on the outer shell. How does our egg look? What about our carton? What about our neighbor's carton? And we crucify ourselves on the regular with these stories. And there are a lot of times there's not a lot of resurrection in our suffering. We just keep lamenting and beating ourselves down and twisting the knife. With these limited beliefs and stories we tell ourselves. I'm how old? Well, I should have this car, this job, this house. I should be in this type of relationship. I should have achieved this by now. But there's no good in that. We're not learning anything from it. We are just collapsing space-time, the quantum field, and infinite possibilities that lie before us that we can't see because we're too stuck in the past or too anxious about the future that we lose the ability to create in the present moment. We get out of the flow. And Jesus was crucified for breaking the laws, the societal laws of the time. But in turn, he broke the laws of what we humans limit ourselves by in the resurrection. I'll say that again. Jesus was crucified for breaking the laws of the time. But in turn, he broke the laws of what we limit ourselves by in the resurrection. So I want to ask you guys. I want to meditate on it. I want to ruminate on it. What implacable, what immutable confines, hence laws, are we placing on ourselves that we can't seem to break through, that we're shackled by? What do we limit ourselves by on the daily? What have we been conditioned by our human, repetitive, conditioned thinking? You know, it's the idea of, my dad had the sickness, he had a heart condition, so it's going to be me. Or, I don't feel like I'm the ideal vision of beauty that was projected to me as a child by maybe my caretakers in society. Yet we forget that beauty is an absolute truth of the divine. And that we're all expressions of God, so hence it is our birthright. We're all beautiful. But the energy you put out is the frequency you tap into. It's a universal law. In a moment of honesty, though, it's hard. It's hard, this shell, this facade, this humanness. It's what we've known. It's what we're conditioned by. It's hard to break past it. And I've been going through some stuff lately. I'll be honest. My hair is thinning. And I can't fight it anymore. He's like, no, it's still there. But no, it's thinning. And the funny thing is, when I was younger, I had this huge, thick head of hair. And that was the construct of Michael. That's what I thought it was always going to be like. And I go to the barber, and I show him a picture of this guy in a boy band. I'd be like, yo, I want my hair to look like that. And they're like, oh, sorry, we can't. Your hair's too thick. It's not going to fall the way, you know, all this stuff. I'm like, damn, I wish my hair was thicker or thinner. Careful what you wish for. But the truth is, even when I had that nice thick head of hair, I was wearing hats and beanies all the time, covering it up. Hence proving that the personal identity is delusional. We're never happy, right? Never happy. I'm not happy now. I wasn't happy then. Just let it go. And that's a tenet of Buddhism, But it's also what Jesus showed us on the cross. He transcended the personal self. It was a miracle. He tapped into that divine frequency and God consciousness and just let go. A little bit of history about back in Jesus' time, the Pharisees, they were the ones that were in charge for enacting the Judean law and rule. They were the high Jewish leaders of the time, and they enacted all the laws of the Old Testament. And one of the issues they had with Jesus, one of the issues that they used to lay claims to the fact that he should be crucified, is that he was performing miracles on the Sabbath. Get out of town. You're doing holy things on a holy day? A little bit hypocritical, don't you think? It's the example of limited consciousness that needs societal laws. You're supposed to rest on Sunday because that's what it said in the Old Testament. That's what they're telling you to do. I'm here to tell you, God's not going to punish you for doing divine work. It's actually your job as an extension of the divine to do divine things, to tap into that. You're just punishing yourself, layering more laws and shackles on yourself by thinking you're not able to. Because that's the message that societal consciousness gives us, back then and now. The man says he's the Son of God. Blasphemy. Even though he showed that blind man how to see, and he conditioned that lame man to get up and walk. Even though he's performing miracles. And those that are in search for a sense of control or power just for power's sake, they want it to be clearly defined to match their own stories of lack and limitation, what they're afraid of, for a sense of control that they're never going to truly attain. And Jesus admonished the Pharisees in Matthew 23:13, saying, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You shut the door of the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. You yourself do not enter, nor you let those who enter who are trying to. Woe to you, teachers of law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You travel over land and sea to win a single convert, and when you have succeeded, you make them twice as much a child of hell as you are. Woe to you, blind guides! You say, if anyone swears by the temple, it means nothing. But anyone who swears by the gold of the temple is bound by that oath. You blind fools, which is greater, the gold or the temple that makes the gold sacred?" He admonished them in this for their outward piety, but for lack of understanding the good works of God and the divine that lies from a heart center of loving kindness. It's not just outward religious and ritualistic observance. He showed that true power, true divinity, lies within. It is not an outward appearance or an accumulation of things. And he was killed for it. Because the people in power wanted control and wanted to keep that power. And it's a tale as old as time, guys. Same as it is today. The powers that be controlled by these lower vibrational frequencies of fear, shame, guilt, manipulation. Sending this message to you constantly, thinking you need something outside of yourself. You need to attain something, you need to acquire something, you need to buy something to make yourself whole. True wholeness lies inside of you. It's a state of being, it's a state of mind, it's a state of thought. And Jesus foretold this, saying that you're going to crucify me and all the prophets. He knew that he was going to be killed, but he did not let that dim his consciousness, his connection. Because he knew that there is no separation from God, even in the trials and tribulations. Even in that short moment of doubt where he showed his humanness on the cross, saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? And Elizabeth Sand Turner, in her wonderful book, Your Hope of Glory, explores this from a unity perspective, saying, by giving expression to this universal sense of aloneness and trial, Jesus released it for himself and for us, experiencing crucifixion spiritually. An erasing of all sense, thought, and feeling is difficult when we face it. During this trying time, we may feel that God has even forsaken us. And when these periods of darkness and doubt come, we should remember that Jesus passed through a similar period. We should remember also that it was comparatively short for him, as it will be for us. The challenge is to persevere until the demonstration is completed. And the demonstration means the absolute knowing that the body is not limited to the physical, which is temporal. It's material. It's on the plane that we give so much credence to. But the quantum, the energetic field, the expansiveness, the eternal, which is God, is so much more vast than we can see, feel, or touch. And his final word on the cross when this was completed was, "Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit." In complete, Sam Turner continues, in complete surrender to the Father, Jesus' prayer, "My will, not my will, but thy will be done," was answered. When we give ourselves fully to God, the last barrier between the personal and spiritual is dissolved. The way is open then for God's action to take place in us, and it cannot fail. That which died upon the cross is the consciousness of all mortal beliefs that hold us in bondage, that we let us be held in. And one of the barriers to accessing this divine truth, in my opinion, is, I feel it a lot, is the self-worth, the deservedness. Well, I don't deserve to be unconditionally loved. I don't know how to give it. And to me, that word, semantically, by definition, is an anomaly. What does deserve mean? Either you are or you aren't. Either you're happy or you're not. Either you do or you don't. It's a fallacy. It's like saying, well, the mountain doesn't deserve to be that close to the clouds. It just is, by definition. And Jesus was the ultimate example of living from this heart center, this place of unconditional love. And he gave it. He was such a paragon and example because he gave it without expecting anything in return. And it's hard. We're human. And when we do something for somebody, we give something, we expect it to be reciprocated, given back to us. And when it doesn't, we recoil. I find myself doing that a lot with my kids. You know, I'll do something I think is great and grandiose, and they slough it off, and I just feel my heart tightening a little bit. Don't do that. You're closing the conduit to that ethereal. You're closing the conduit to that pure potentiality that lies for you in the ether to create and create more. It starts with love, and it ends with love. And therein, to me, lies the beauty and truth of the resurrection. How did a man die and come back to this plane? Like I said, Jesus was the ultimate example of love. And he lived in that state. He prayed and he meditated. He merged with God and he dissolved the spiritual and the physical. I believe that Jesus was the ultimate mystic, the ultimate quantum scientist and metaphysician. Yes, Jesus died. But it is entirely possible that his consciousness fully merged with God, so there was no separation. He became more wave than particle. Particle being material, mass, physical. Wave being a frequency, ethereal, quantum. He was so in tune with universal law that he was able to collapse the linear space-time and emerge with quantum possibility. Hear me out. Matter alone cannot influence matter, but energy can. He performed a myriad of miracles, and yeah, no, I haven't heard of or seen anybody walk on water in modern times. But he did say, "Truly, truly, I say to you, those that believe in me, those that do the good works that I do shall do them and more." And he was talking about the Christ consciousness. Christ being just a way of thinking and believing. He performed all kinds of miracles. And we're like, oh God, that was way back when. But if you think about it, miracles happen all the time, every single day, to people you know. Think about that person that has this terminal illness or this diagnosis. And all of a sudden, they just let go, de-stress their lives, and just say, And all of a sudden, they astound their physicians, their medical team. It goes away. Their cancers, their illness, whatever it is. Hell, it happened to us. We had a dog. We had a corgi, and I've told this story. He was diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma early on in life. He's given a couple months to live. Put him on chemo. Cancer came back. Gave him a couple weeks to live. And Leah and I were like, no, we're done. We're just going to let him eat all the ice cream and steak and roll around and horse poop. Be happy. And he loved it. He loved doing that stuff. He loved the poop. And the thing is, whatever it is, whatever your frequency of love is, I'm telling you, it's true. He lived another 5-6 years. We got to spend an amazing life with him. His oncologist was astounded. I've talked stories about Joe Dispenza up here. And I've studied his books a lot. And I love what he's got to say. Because honestly, if you listen to it, he's saying the same stuff that Jesus is. He's saying, quit telling yourself these old stories. Don't limit yourself by thought. Tap into this frequency, this energy. And you will influence this matter. Your body. The world around you. He was flung from a bicycle during a triathlon. His spine was broken in 4 different places. And all the doctors and his physicians and teams told him, hey, man, you need to have this very invasive surgery where they're going to stick a metal rod up your spine and fuse it. And Joe was a chiropractor. He said, no, I don't think so. He's like, I know about the mind-body connection. I know that if I do the surgery, I'm never going to have full mobility again, and I'm going to constantly be in pain. So he went and he meditated. Every single day, for hours on end, and he visualized his spine healing, one vertebrae by vertebrae by vertebrae. And if he had a negative thought or emotion during it, he would stop and start over again. Sometimes these meditations would last hours and hours all day. But within 3-4 months, he was walking again. He was healed. He made it his life's mission to tell these stories and to get behind the science of this stuff. Anita Morjani, I've talked about her too. By her own definition, she got severe cancer because she was holding on to these feelings of stress, lack, guilt, shame, because she was from a Hindi culture, and she walked away from an arranged marriage, and it brought shame on her family. She died in a hospital, and she ascended, and she went and saw the spirit of her father, who greeted her, saying, I am so sorry for how I made you feel. I wish I knew better then, but I know better now, and your time here is not over. You need to go back and do good works. She came into her body, and her cancer was miraculously gone in a matter of weeks, maybe months. That middle-aged little mother that lifts the car up off her son, the 2-ton car. You can't tell me miracles don't exist. You can't tell me these people didn't let go of their limited thinking and tap into this energetic consciousness where they're influencing matter. It happens all the time. The Bible depicts that Jesus spent some 40 days after his resurrection with his disciples and apostles. How? How, right? I think the answer is love. He was so connected. And like I've said, love is the highest frequency. Have you ever noticed that when you're in a state of love or in a new relationship, all your stuff just goes away, right? All your aches and pains. You just feel lighter, more ethereal. You're floating. It's because when you're at a high frequency, the higher the frequency, the higher and faster an atom vibrates. Guess what? We're trillions of atoms. We're influencing that. And the less time it spends in the material. It's more wave than physical. Jesus loved so much and was so connected to the people he was around, so connected to spirit. I think it's 100% believable that his energy came to them. The theory of quantum entanglement states two particles are connected and affect one another, even if those particles are light years away. We've all had mystical experiences, right? I know I have. When our first son was born, I'd go into his crib at night. If he'd be upset, crying, wouldn't sleep, or just putting him to bed, or just to go check on him. And I'd walk in there with this sense of not enoughness, like, oh man, I don't know how to be a father, I don't know how to be a good father, what am I doing? And the scent would just permeate the room, and it was unmistakably Red Door, and that was my mother's signature perfume. I lost my mother some year before, and I was like, what? You know, I got the cold shivers and my goosebumps popping up, and I called my wife. I was like, Leah, get in here, do you smell that? She's like, yeah. It wasn't just me making this stuff up. A few months ago, when I was doing an essay for my Jesus teachings class, I was writing that I think that this class will be a conduit or catalyst for healing between me and my own father and my religious trauma. He, too, had passed many years ago. And as I'm typing out of my computer in my office, the glasses on my shelves just start ringing loud, loud. And I got that cold energy over me again. And you cannot tell me that that is not the energy of someone I've loved, energy of love from someone that I've been entangled with. Quantum entanglement. Charles Fillmore ponders this a little bit more in his book, Jesus Christ Heals. He says, when Jesus had purified his body sufficiently, he ascended into this place in the spiritual ethers on our planet. And in our high spiritual realizations, we make temporary contact with him and his spiritual character, represented by his name. But like the apostles, we're not able to go there and abide because we have not overcome earthly attachments. We shall, however, attain the same freedom and spiritual power that he attained if we follow him in the regeneration. But we should clearly understand that we cannot go to Jesus' place through death. We must overcome death as he did before we can be glorified with him in the heavens. Meaning, the higher realms of mind. I know that might be a lot to take in. Tall order on some level, but I think that if we can just start with love, just love, 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 love yourself, love your body, love your family, love your friends, love your neighbors, love your enemies. And that's the hard work, right? But it's just staying in that consciousness over and over and over again, regenerating, regenerating, regenerating. And we're human. So there may be times when we fall out, no doubt. But don't berate yourself. Don't beat yourself up. Just lovingly notice and lightly step back into that frequency. And I promise you, if you make a habit of this, your ascension will begin. How high will you go? I don't know. I don't think there are any limits. I wish you all a happy Easter. I wish you to focus on good things and blessings on your journey. Let's take these thoughts and ideas into meditation. I want us all to think about just the energy of a breath. Breath can be so healing. So fill yourself up with it and breathe in love and let out any heaviness, anything that bothers you. Notice your body. Feel if there's any spot that feels tense or tight, something you've been holding on for a couple weeks, a couple years, or a lifetime. I want you to look at that thing, that feeling, that energy that's there. And you realize that it's there as information. It's telling you something. Breathe into it. Whatever it may be, send it healing. Let it know that you're aware. If you need to, say you're sorry for neglecting you. Whatever it may be. Give loving kindness to that and breathe in and breathe out. Feel the expanse of your lungs. and realize that we're not beings in a universe, but we're the universe in a being. And that our potentiality is unlimited. Know that love and spirituality is not an absence of hard times or hard things, but it's the ability to go through it with grace, humility, and compassion. Just a little bit deeper. Let that breath get to the lowest spot, the lowest point, the lowest shock of your body, and bring all that good energy up all the way to the top of your head. And let it go. Let it know, let it go. And know that you are a child of God. And so it is.